and welcome to the latest episode of the Bankers podcast series, Banking in Transition. In this series, the Bankers editors are speaking to industry experts from across financial services to explore how banking is responding to global challenges and trends, such as the COVID-19 pandemic, sustainability, and the drive for increased technological innovation. I'm Marie Kempley, the Bankers Investment Banking and Capital Markets Editor, and in this podcast, I'm joined by Raj Bakru, Chief Innovation Officer at ACA Group, a business that provides governance, risk, and compliance advisory and solutions for financial services firms. Thanks for joining me today, Raj.
Thanks for having me.
No, pleasure. And in this podcast, we're going to be discussing the tricky issue of communication surveillance for financial firms, you know, and this is in the context of firms ensuring that they are complying with regulations, such as around the avoidance of financial crime and market abuse, etc. But Raj, to begin with, perhaps, you know, we can begin with maybe describe how this world has changed over, you know, the last decade or even, you know, perhaps earlier than that, you know, when considering the proliferation of different platforms and communication methods, you know, in the context of communication surveillance, because, you know, we're not just talking about phone calls and emails here, right?
No. Things used to be a lot simpler for sure in terms of how we used to communicate and what we needed to capture and surveil from a compliance perspective. Certainly phone calls and emails, obviously for quite some time now have been in scope, but now we have, you know, chat. We've had Bloomberg chat for a long time that a lot of folks on the street have been using. Other forms of chat have emerged, of course. So now we have instant messaging. People are using Slack. They're using Teams. And now, obviously, with the pandemic, much more video. So Zoom, Teams, et cetera, variety of platforms out there. And it's just such a complex world to ingest and understand that data. You think about facial expressions in video. You can communicate so many things that are non-verbal, non-captured. You can't translate or transcribe some of the things that are coming across in these new communication mechanisms. And even with the old ones, right, with emails, we can now embed emojis and GIFs, right? And how do you process that and understand the context and what's actually being conveyed so that you're surveilling in an appropriate way? Languages have always been tricky, right? Understanding complexities of different languages. Now we have it across all these other mediums. We have slang. It's very different geo by geo. So just the complexity of the surveillance spaces has grown tremendously over the last few years.
And almost, you know, to add another layer on top of that, of course, recently we've had the pandemic, and with that, that brought mass migration in the first instance to home working. And then subsequently, we've now seen this kind of adoption of hybrids, you know, part office, part home working. You know, what additional challenges has that thrown up in communication surveillance?
Basically, the wall of what's considered business communication is gone now, right? We're all working from home. We're using our home internet connections. We're using our home laptops or our phones. And increasingly, the discussions that we're having on our phones with text messaging, for example, one thread might be personal. What are you doing this weekend? Next thread might be business communications about a trade or about you know, some deal that you're working on. And compliance officers obviously have the responsibility to surveil that. They don't want to take in all of that personal data, all sorts of concerns that we can talk about as you do that. But they have to bring in the business communication. So how do you sift between the two and identify what's truly business communications? Because increasingly we're using those consumer tools for business purposes. And the pandemic, while it doesn't force that, it has certainly driven us in that direction. And we're all doing that more and more now.
As you say, you know, we live in this time now where those barriers, as you say, are kind of blurring and it's becoming more difficult. And also, I guess, employee expectations around data privacy and their, you know, and the privacy and of what they're discussing in those conversations, they have expectations around that. I mean, how can firms manage that delicate issue then? You know, as you say, it's a tricky and emerging area, but what sort of things are they starting to do and think about?
A lot of it comes down to what you've told your employees you're going to do. So appropriate disclosures, having employees sign off on your compliance program and how you're going to ingest that data. So they're on notice and they understand that, you know, if I'm gonna text message for business purposes and my personal communications are sitting alongside that, that's all coming in together. So you have to make a choice as an employee of do I just not want to use those types of tools and maintain that privacy of personal communications? Or frankly, do I not care? Do I get more benefit from the convenience of these additional communication mechanisms and not care about the privacy and concerns as much? And I'll sign off on that and allow you to ingest my personal data. The communication surveillance rules here are in conflict with privacy rules, right? But most privacy rules, including GDPR and the rules we have over here in the US, state that your business compliance regulations take priority, right? When it's business communications that are within those messages that are implicated, that's the predominant rule. Certainly everyone wants to maintain privacy. Everyone's going to face a case of, compliance officer receiving a request for data destruction from an employee or a former employee, right? And they're going to have to respond to those and understand what they've disclosed and what the employees have signed off and make sure they have a robust compliance program there. We support clients on both the privacy side of things as well as the compliance side of things. So we see it both directions. The financial services compliance side of things will usually take hold. And that will be the leading regulation, if you will, for what you have to comply with here.
Yeah, you've spoken already as well around the complexity of operating within an international context, and firms being subject to different regulations in different geographic jurisdictions and also potentially conflicting regulation. I mean, how do firms manage that,
Yeah, thankfully, most of the regulations, aside from privacy not being in conflicting with the financial services regulations, most of the global regulations are going in the same direction. So you can design a program that's generally fit for global purposes. There will be nits and nuances about every global regime. You have to do certain things for anti-bribery and corruption, certain things for modern slavery, certain things for insider trading and market abuse. There'll be different specific policies you need to apply against the communications that you're archiving and surveilling. But the act of ingesting all of that content is global. That's pretty much required across the world. Privacy rules are obviously becoming more and more global, and many of them are being modeled off GDPR. So thankfully, there's not too much conflict between what you're seeing from privacy regimes and mandates across the world. Certainly, they each have their own nits and nuances. Unfortunately, here in the US, we have a state policy mandate right now versus a federal one, which complicates things. You see other rules in India and Singapore, but largely they align with GDPR. And for most of them, the outcome is that your financial services surveillance requirements are the predominant ones and are what you need to look at. It's more what do you ingest. So for example, over in the UK, obviously you guys were ahead in requiring the ingestion of phone calls and the recording of phone calls. That's now taken hold more globally. Global firms made that a international thing. They didn't just do it over in the UK for their UK affiliates or UK branches. They did it for everyone across the world. So where you can, just going to least common denominator, if you will, of the requirements makes things a lot easier. But it does also mean that you're now sitting on a tremendous amount more data because you pretty much have to ingest everything.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your views and experiences with us today, Raj, and what is an area that continues to evolve. But that's all for this podcast. You can keep up to date by subscribing to our weekly podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and Acast, and follow our discussions at thebanker.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.